even from the little Grossman knew of the case, he realised that this position was a complete volte-face on the arguments the exact same lawyers had used in the Valor suit. Then the company had said radium was a poison, because poison was not covered by the law and the court had to find against the girls. Now that the law had been rewritten to include poisons, the company was trying the opposite tack. It was just the sort of slippery, unjust finagling that Grossman had fought against before. Inspired, he rose to the occasion. And even though this was a modest hearing, Grossman now revealed how apt it was that his office was located in Chicago's theatre district. For he was a showman, a silver-tongued orator, and as he stood centre stage in the courthouse, he exhibited his skills. Seeing him shine, many of the girls were seen weeping that an accomplished attorney was finally on their side. "We should have laws," Grossman started, in his sombre, melodious voice, "that will do away with things that rack, ruin, and destroy bodies." He turned and scanned his eyes across the crippled women sitting at the desk. He gestured at them with feeling. "We do not need to have martyrs such as we have sitting around this table," he said, "and the many dead who worked with these girls." He paused dramatically and then went on. "It is a heavy cross to Calvary," he declared, "but we will bear it, and with the help of God, we will fight to a finish." Chapter 49. Work began on the case immediately. That same day, straight after the hearing, Grossman and the women met for a conference so he could gather more information. Then he packed up his big brown leather briefcase, swiveled in his spats, and headed on back to Chicago. Assisting him in his preparations were his loyal secretary, Carol Reiser, and his German wife, Trudel. Much of the historical radium literature was in German, so Trudel spent hours translating documents as Grossman got up to speed on the intricacies of the case. He regularly turned in 18-hour days, and his team worked hard to keep up. Since Al Purcell now lived in Chicago, he nipped over to Grossman's office to see if the women needed to do anything. "For God's sake," Grossman had declared, "get a doctor's statement." They followed his directions, but securing their medical records turned out to be difficult. "I have written my doctors," reported Catherine later that year, and no reply came back. Pearl Payne also found that the hospitals where she'd been treated refused to release her records. She ended up begging her doctors, "Please help me get these records. This case is up for final hearing." The women were not the only ones requesting records. That fall, Grossman served notice on Radium Dial to produce the results of all physical examinations of employees. The company had concealed the true test results. Grossman wanted to know how much the firm had known and when. The women were delighted by his diligence. "At a great sacrifice," Pearl Payne wrote to commend him, "you have continued daily to lay other engagements aside to formulate the great mass of information necessary to properly present these cases." Grossman decided that the lead litigant would be Catherine Donahue, followed by Charlotte Purcell, whom Grossman described as "my next best case." Catherine didn't necessarily have the most evidence behind her, nor was she the most compelling personality to take the stand. It wasn't even that she had the most fire in her belly for the fight. It was simply believed that she was the woman who would be next to die.